Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome back. We are live with Taxation is Theft, and today I have Zach Foster from the Mises Mombi Institute, which is a pretty awesome organization that works with libertarians in both Cuba and Venezuela. Welcome.
Glad to be here. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. So there's a lot going on in Venezuela, and I want to talk about that. But first, let's, because I know once we start talking about that, we'll run straight to the end. So let's talk about Cuba a little bit first, since you're doing a little bit of work over there.
Absolutely. So Cuba is actually how I first got involved with the mess in Venezuela. And the way that I first got involved with the Cuban libertarians, yes, there are libertarians down in Cuba, is back in February of 2017, there was a couple of gentlemen down in Havana that were attending a book club, the Mises Cuba book club. It was just a few people inside of a house. They reached out to some people in Spain, some Spanish-speaking libertarians. They sent them some Rothbard books, and that's how that club got started. Well, these two guys got caught by state security, which is Cuba's political police. Just imagine if the FBI and the NSA was the same organization and they spent about 5% of their time going after terrorists and 95% of the time going after protesters, then that would be state security. So they caught these gentlemen with the wrong books. They arrested them under false charges of attempted assault of a police officer. And they were sentenced in a kangaroo court to some time in labor prison. One of the guys got 7 years. The other one got 1 year. He's out now. But, I mean, the guy still did a freaking year in a labor prison for having the wrong book. Where's the justice? So, anyway, these guys were arrested for a couple of days when a recently arrived Cuban refugee in Miami contacted me on Facebook. He found me in a Spanish-language libertarian group. I'm Mexican-American. My mother's family's from Chihuahua, so that's how I know the language. So he found me. He didn't speak English yet because he had just gone to Havana as a refugee. This guy was a libertarian, too, and he was asking me, help, help, help. My friends are in prison. They're libertarian. This is an unjust crime. Please, we need help getting the word out. And I was kind of cautious that this might be a Nigerian prince scam, but the guy never asked for money. He specifically kept trying to lobby me to get media attention for his friends who are political prisoners. So because he kept insisting they're libertarian, and I asked him a couple of questions, and he was dropping Mises, and he was dropping Hayek, and he was dropping Ron Paul. And I said, all right, this dude's obviously done his homework, so and he's still not asked me for money. So, okay, I'll look into this. And sure enough, our news release appeared that the Mises Institute here in the United States published, and a couple other people published news releases. So I talked to the ex-com of LP Nevada, which is my home LP, and I asked them, hey, guys, libertarian political prisoners in Cuba, this is a first. What the hell could we possibly do about this? So Alex DiBenedetto, who was the political director at the time, said, well, I mean, we could bring it to the ex-com. Maybe pass a resolution, get the word out. I really don't know what else we can do. So I said, all right, well, let's pass a resolution and get the word out. And we did. We published a press release about that in English and in Spanish, and we disseminated it. And next thing we know, a couple days later, LP New Hampshire had made a very similar resolution. Then LP Oklahoma, then a whole bunch of other states, city affiliates, excuse me, New Mexico, Chicago. All these groups were passing resolutions condemning the Cuban government for arresting these libertarians for essentially thought crime. And next thing you know, there was a motion being passed by the LNC, and it was making international headlines. And The police in Cuba stepped up their level of persecution against the libertarians. We're talking about people were getting arrested, people were getting beaten. A lot of people got beaten. A lot of people in 2017, as a matter of fact, got arrested probably 8 or 9 times. I mean, there have been other arrests, arbitrary arrests of libertarians in 2018 and so far in 2019, but 2017 was definitely the year of the crucible as far as, you know, the most per capita arrests. You had people getting their heads busted open by police with batons inside the police stations. You had other times the state security police would be dressed in plain clothes. They just kidnap activists. So instead of wasting time taking you down to the police station, trying to interrogate you when they know you're not going to talk, they would just pick up our guys, beat the shit out of them, take them like 25 or 30 kilometers, you know, to the very outskirts of Havana, and then dump them there, you know, to make him have to walk back. So number one, they're hurt. Number two, they're terrified. They're in shock. But also, you're walking back 25, 30 kilometers. Not only is that a health risk, but you're having people miss work. You know, that's a long walk. You're having people wear out their shoes, and they can't afford to get new shoes because your shoes are meant for you to get from point A to point B. They're not meant for you to be walking 30 miles.
Yeah,
that's yeah, they weren't. That's so.
That's something we terrible. Take for granted here. That's, I mean,
yeah.
Wow. So I want to put this in perspective. What year was it that that Fidel passed in relation?
I believe Fidel passed. No, 2013, that was Hugo Chavez. I think Fidel passed in 2011. And since then, Raul's been running the show, but he's semi-retired. So while Raul still shows up to important meetings, for the most part, it's Diaz-Canel is carrying the torch of commie statism.
Wow. So this, I don't know. I guess there's, you know, there are some people who think, you know, Fidel came along, and this is probably the people who like socialism. He came along and he did all these great things and gave, you know, great health care and education to Cuba. And of course, they might look at this and say, well, this isn't Fidel Castro's doing. How much of this is in place, like, I guess, left over from Fidel, like these kind of state police organizations?
In short, all of it. So give me about 2 minutes and I'll tell you a very interesting history. Okay. I'm not here to bash on communism. I disagree with it. It doesn't work. But I'm not here to bash on communism, not here to bash on socialism. I am here specifically to denounce people who use state power to oppress other people who disagree with them. I don't care if that's the Communist Party of Cuba or the United Socialist Party of Venezuela or the Republican Party of Arizona, who sued the McCormick campaign and ended up getting the entire LP slate kicked off the ballot for the 2018 day. It's all right. It's all wrong. It's all bad.
Sure.
Down there, it just has to be really bad. But as far as when Fidel Castro stormed that barracks in 1953, I believe that he was fully justified. When he landed on the beach in 1956, I believe that he was fully justified. First, when his convoy rolled in Havana, I think he was justified in going after the people that he was specifically trying to go after. Very quickly after the Cuban Revolutionary War was over, Fidel very quickly started selling out the revolution. Now, the public narrative is that he made all kinds of overtures to the U.S. government to get a bunch of support. Which is true. I mean, he did ask them for their. There's a secret history that before the end of the war, Fidel and his inner circle, especially through his brother Raul, they'd already been having meetings with members of the KGB. They'd already been having meetings with members of the Communist Party of Cuba, which ironically was a very tiny group in 1959 and had almost nothing to do with the Cuban Revolution because. The war period is before Fidel became a communist. His brother was a dedicated communist. Che was a dedicated communist. But, you know, of the 82 people that landed on the beach in 1956, I would say it was definitely less than 10 were Marxists. Everybody else was just about liberating Cuba. And even Fidel himself was on the fence for most of it. But the thing is, he needed power. He had some very specific goals: get Batista out of power, remove the military government, restore democratic multi-party elections, and do some limited land and agrarian redistribution. Not to the extent that he ended up actually doing it, but when we're looking at Cuba in the 1950s, crony capitalism, statism,
right?
We're looking at free markets being abused by governments to, kick peasants off their land and give certain lands to their friends. That had been happening since the Spanish colonial period. So for a limited extent, I mean, there was some valid arguments to be made about redistributing land that had been taken from people who had a valid case for it. They weren't going to leave people destitute. Just give everybody having their own little plot, and that seems a lot more reasonable than what ended up happening was these everybody gets their land taken away. You have these huge collective farms. They were trying to model their economy after the Soviet Union. But in 1959, Fidel had already secretly sold the Cuban government to the communists. And Che Guevara was the one who created the security agency that is today State Security. So Che Guevara is actually the J. Edgar Hoover of the very organization that arrested these libertarians. Another thing that happened starting in 1959 was towards the end, it became plain that Fidel was definitely a military dictator and that Cuba was going to become a Marxist state because all these war heroes, who had been very famous throughout the war and had all this press coverage and people expected that they were going to be big figures in the new Cuba. All of a sudden, these dudes are like running frog farms in Camagüey, whereas members of the Communist Party and Fidel's inner circle are getting the cabinet jobs and the ministry positions and the chiefs of police and the military commands. People inside of Fidel's own army, who were not dedicated communists, were gotten rid of. So, for example, Hubert Matos, who was a big hero in Cuban history, and he ended up dying in Miami, but he had a hero's funeral among all the exiles because he was one of the people that emerged clean. He saw the wave of executions. I mean, the thousands of executions, officially hundreds, but really thousands, because there's a lot of executions, the arrests, the mass imprisonment. He saw this. He said, "You said that the revolution was not going to be like this. I'm not going to participate in this. I love you. It was a privilege to be able to fight with you. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to change history. But you are going down a road I'm not willing to follow. So I'm just going to peacefully bow out of politics." So that guy ended up spending 20 years in prison for taking that position and trying to resign. And then another guy, Camilo Cienfuegos, he ended up disappearing. There are several different eyewitness reports of defectors from Castro's government that said, no, actually they murdered the guy and made it look like he died in a plane crash. That's the thing. He disappeared. And then a civil war started in Cuba that was much bigger than the war to overthrow Batista. For example, including all the guerrillas and all the different militia groups, which there's like six or seven different guerrilla armies besides Fidel's. His group only did maybe 15, 20% of the fighting. All these other armies, they still had their guns and whatnot. So when they saw that Fidel was becoming a military dictator, they went back to the mountains and they went back to do a guerrilla war. And Fidel said, "I know exactly how we all won this war together. I am not going to let them do that." So he brought in a couple of hundred Russian military advisors and they taught him how to take Berlin in World War II. So they conscripted a national militia because Cuba did not have a large standing army at the time. They dissolved Batista's army. So they conscripted almost 300,000 men into the National Revolutionary Militia. And then they did these encircle campaigns where, like Berlin in World War II, they would just send these human waves wherever the guerrillas were fighting, in these large concentric rings, until the rebels were all annihilated. So people talk about Bay of Pigs. People talk about the Cuban Missile Crisis. those were only episodes in this big chain of events where there is this long civil war that had way more people mobilized and way more people killed than the war that came to power. But it was erased from history. And so the short answer is all these instruments of oppression that are going on today, that all goes directly back to 1959. So Fidel is not innocent of it. I believe that when he landed on the beach, when he rolled in Havana, he was justified. He was on the right path. Very quickly, he stopped it. So ironically, at his trial, when he first tried to overthrow Batista, he said, "History will absolve me." I believe that history absolves him up to 1959. But after that, history very much condemns him.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, that's something that I think we see a lot of this even in American politics, because we see a lot of politicians coming up with, you know, supposedly good intentions. I mean, you know, someone like Bernie Sanders comes along and he wants to, you know, he wants to give health care to everybody. He wants everybody to be able to get into college. Supposedly good intentions. Now, a lot of people will say he doesn't even have good intentions, but assuming he does.
Yeah, Barack, you can keep your doctor.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's so many of these plans. And, you know, even if you look at the drug war, I don't know how many people would actually believe it. But if there were a few people that said, "Oh, my God, you know what? I thought if we banned drugs, we were actually doing a good thing for people. We would be saving lives because they wouldn't have access to all these dangerous drugs like crack and meth and all this other stuff." They might actually have believed that and passed a law. But it's, you know, to see kind of all when it actually happens and all the negative consequences that come with it, you know, did it happen that way because absolute power corrupts absolutely? Or did it happen just because that was never like the people who designed the plan were more sinister from the beginning? I think it's really hard to say. So I can totally see where somebody might have had good intentions and just turned to 180 and said, "Oh, now that I have all this power, I'm going to do everything, you know, differently." You know, it's really interesting to see all that. And, you know, one of these are one of the things where, unless you're that person and you say, "No, you know what, I was lying to everybody the whole time," it's, you know, it's really difficult to prove either way. So I think that's some really interesting perspective. I want to keep talking about that because I know there's a lot, but I also want to talk a lot about Venezuela, because we're hearing a lot about this in the news, especially with, you know, with this. Some people are calling it a coup. Some people are saying, you know, no, this is Guaido is the official president. There's a lot going back and forth, and I know you have kind of some more inside knowledge there because you've been in communication with some people who are actually in that country, and they're seeing these things firsthand. So I guess let's talk a little bit about that. What's the current situation that's going on down there?
The current situation, my interpretation of it is that Guaido's government is the quote unquote legitimate government. If we're going by the board game rule book, that's the Constitution. By those rules, then yes, Guaido is the guy. Maduro is a usurper. The problem is there's you know, when we look at this from a Rothbardian perspective, there are two competing states trying to get control of one country. So Guaido's state has a constitution and the support of the masses. Maduro's state has a rubber stamp Congress and the army. So that's the complexity of the situation. A lot of people point to the 2018 presidential elections that happened in Venezuela because most of the country boycotted them. For example, usually 8 to 10 million Venezuelans vote in elections, 10 to 12 million in good years. There's about 3.5 million people that voted in this particular election. The only majority of them were just Maduro supporters who showed up for the dog and pony show. And then a couple of idiots from the softer side of the opposition that thought they were going to show up and really do democracy this time. But the 2018 presidential elections were a sham. The constitutional crisis really started in 2015. The power struggle started 2013, 2014. There was a presidential election in 2013 because Hugo Chavez died. So once he died, Maduro became the provisional president. And then, you know, within X a number So the two biggest candidates were Nicolas Maduro, who was the hand-picked guy of the most popular president in modern Venezuelan history. And then the other guy was Leopoldo López of the Popular Will Party, Voluntad Popular. They're the Social Democrats. He was the next most popular guy. López lost the election by the hair of his chinny chin chin, a little bit under one percentage point. There were reports of funny business. There was a lot of protesting in the streets, but for the most part, the opposition said, hey, you know, we'll get them next time, whatever. 2015 comes around, they have the National Assembly elections. National Assembly is the unicameral Congress of the Venezuelan Republic. In those elections, the United Socialist Party got their asses, they got their butts handed to them on a platter. The opposition parties, especially the Social Democrats, Popular Will, the opposition got the National Assembly by more than 60%. It was definitely a landslide because Maduro's government was historically unpopular. So in the few days immediately after that National Assembly election, the lame duck Socialist Assembly stacked the Supreme Court with a bunch of judges who were Socialist Party members. So next thing you know, the Supreme Court goes from a small body of people to like this big old forum of like almost 50 dudes. It was totally ridiculous. Yeah, and most of them were Socialist Party members. And then they started becoming legal rubber stamps for anything that the president wanted to do by executive order. So starting in 2016, the new National Assembly gets sworn in, which is controlled by the opposition. Maduro starts doing all these executive orders. And then this stacked court starts saying, yes, it's totally legal for him to do that. And then the most audacious thing that he did was he started creating another Congress or a whole nother government for himself. So what he did is first he stacked the Supreme Court with Socialist Party judges. Then he had his people start pressuring all of the hostile judges or all the opposition judges to resign. Then they started getting threatened. Then it got to the point where members of his own party were denouncing that he was doing this. So you had the former attorney general of the Socialist Party, multiple Supreme Court judges of the Socialist Party who are now living in exile, all of them denounced that, yeah, he was threatening our families, like if we weren't going along with his game. And that's the thing. These people are Chavistas, but they are dedicated to Hugo Chavez's constitution. And Maduro started deviating from his constitution. Then the next devious thing that he did was he had his rubber stamp court resurrect the National Constituent Assembly from 1999. The National Constituent was a one-time thing, that it's a special Congress that exists just in the event that a constitutional crisis, you know, should happen or for whatever reason. But that was a one-time thing that happened under Chavez's presidency. If there's going to be another, is required to ratify that. Well, he didn't go to them to ratify that. He had his rubber stamp court declared, no, it's legal for him to do this. He's cool. So without going through the consul process, he ratified the constituent. So then he went and made this whole parallel Congress for himself. And then his rubber stamp Supreme Court started making all these decisions, granting power to this rubber stamp Congress. Basically where Juan Guaido comes into the picture, he was elected into the National Assembly in the 2015 sweep. It's very ironic that people call him a right winger or a fascist because he is a social democrat from Popular Will. That party is a member of the Socialist International. So how much of a right wing fascist can he be? He's basically Barack Obama, like 2008 Barack Obama in Spanish. Let me qualify. Not 2016 Barack Obama. 2008 Barack Obama in Spanish. That's Juan Guaido. So he comes into the scene. He happened to be elected Speaker of the Assembly after it was very clear that Maduro had created this whole separate government for himself, and for him and his party to stay in power. Then when his president, because the elections were boycotted by most of the country, then in accordance with the Constitution, the National Assembly declared that Juan Guaido is going to be the president. He did not declare himself to be the president like a lot of the U.S. media reports. Article 233 of Hugo Chavez's constitution says when there is no elected president sitting in office, then the Speaker of the Assembly will be the provisional president, and his main job is to make free elections happen so that we can have a proper president. So because Maduro completely went around the constitutional process and literally created this whole government, he even suspended Hugo Chavez's constitution and had an assembly write him his own where he can stay in power infinitely. So that's the thing. The big irony is, as far as the institutions that Hugo Chavez was trying to create inside of Venezuelan politics, Juan Guaido is the legal successor of that, whereas Maduro, again, went and created this whole parallel government for himself because his party lost the National Assembly in 2015. So when people want to say Maduro is the duly elected president, that's garbage. That dances around the fact that he created this whole parallel government for himself.
So he's the legitimate president of the alternate government that he created, but the alternate government that he created is not a legitimate government. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, correct. If you believe that Hugo Chavez and that constitution is the law of the land of Venezuela, then yes, Guaido is the guy and Maduro is fan fiction. The problem is Maduro is fan fiction with all the guns.
Interesting. So now and forgive my ignorance on some of this, but it sounds like they both have a little bit of an army that's backing them up. Is there some sort of military force that Guaido has?
Guaido's got a couple of hundred guys, and Maduro has the armed forces and the militia and the paramilitary groups and the Colombian guerrillas.
Okay. And so now there's also, like we've seen footage of tanks running people over, and I guess there's a group of people who have like a blue ribbon or something that they wear on their arm. What's that group?
That's the Guaido people. That blue ribbon represents they're being loyal to the 1999 Constitution.
Okay. So are they really kind of like organized working for Guaido, or are these kind of like organizations that are just people who are just like, no, we're standing for this. This is what we represent. Like, is there a hierarchy to that, or is it really just those are people who are kind of resisting Maduro's?
At this moment in time, they're basically a glorified bodyguard. And right now, I mean, as many of these guys as possible are wheeling in their army units to do the same thing. But it's going to be a very slow process because they're still trying to do this peacefully. It's very difficult, though, because you've got these paramilitary groups that are going around, shooting people, making the situation very dangerous. Now, a lot of people are still asking, what does the U.S. have to do with Venezuela? Why are we having this conversation, Zach? Why are you even involved? Did you not read any of Ron Paul's books? Well, yeah, I did. And so did most of the libertarians down there in Venezuela. I am involved in Venezuela specifically because I am trying to help libertarians. So if libertarians here in America want to know what is the correct position about Venezuela, that is, it's correct that the CIA has a very shady history abroad, especially in Latin America. It is correct that we do not want the military to invade because Venezuela will quickly turn into Iraq in Spanish. At the same time, while we don't want the U.S. military involved, we as libertarians have been called to help our Venezuelan libertarian brothers. They have called us. Specifically, American libertarians, we the Venezuelan libertarians need help. We can't do this alone. We're starving. We have no money. We have no guns. We need help. So that's what I'm doing as a free individual and as somebody who does not believe in borders. I am helping other libertarians who are under attack right now because let's just say that you want to go the full on you know, lefty route, or you want to go full retard like the Ron Paul Institute has been lately with all their Maduro propaganda, say, no, 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 I don't care. Maduro is a legitimate guy. Okay, fine, whatever. Maduro is a legitimate guy, but remember, we are the party. So legitimacy at the end of the day is a very nice word exercise that we have with people who vote Democrat and Republican, because they need to hear that shit. Whereas we as libertarians, we operate on a different level. My level is the state that currently controls that territory is waging an actual war against libertarians. For example, my friend Daniel was shot in the ribs in the 2014 protest. He still has holes in his torso. My other friend Melanie, she is a nursing student. She's got a little foundation that takes medicine and food and diapers to sick children in hospitals and also to kids in the poorest of the poorest neighborhoods. She was delivering medicine in a hospital 3 months ago when first the militia came in and detained her and was like, what the hell are you doing with this unauthorized medical aid? Why are you undermining the Bolivarian Revolution? You ought to be arrested for this. You know, you could be tortured for this, blah, blah, blah. They were physically threatening her for this. And then finally, after several hours, you know, they finally let her go. Of course, they confiscated the medicine and the food, the bastards. Well, then she was trying to exit the hospital. Then the paramilitary thugs were standing there at the front door, and then they detained her and were threatening her and were making sure that they kept, you know, grabbing their guns and putting their guns at the ready when they were talking about what's going to happen if she keeps trying to undermine the revolution. Who else? Lauren Soleil is a libertarian who had actually fled to Colombia because there were false charges of terrorism leveled at him. And from Colombia, he maintained the activism and the advocacy, telling people what's really going on in Venezuela. So at that time, there was tensions going on.
I think we lost
the Colombian government. Hello?
Yeah, sorry, we just lost you for a second. You're good now.
So Lauren Soleil, he was in Colombia. You know, there was tension going on between the Colombian government and Maduro's government, so they made a deal. The Colombian police actually arbitrarily arrested Lauren Soleil. They did not have a warrant. They did not give him criminal charges. It was literally the police showed up, effectively kidnapped him, put him on a bus back to Venezuela, and as soon as he got there, their state security was there waiting for him. So he spent the next 4 years in an underground prison cell at the state security service headquarters in Caracas. And I thought that that prison was going to be, you know, like a very medieval looking, you know, rock walls and rats running around the floor. You know, like, because I'm getting these mental images from Cuba, which is a very decrepit third world country. But Lawrence says that this was the complete opposite. It was like something out of a sci-fi movie. It was like The Hunger Games. It looked like a hospital. It was pristine. All their torture methods were high tech. They could inject you with things to make you talk. They could inject you with chemical compounds to make you feel excruciating pain. You know, some of the same things that they're doing at Guantanamo. They would keep people awake. But at Guantanamo, they only take things to a certain level, whereas here, like, they would actually beat you and they would actually, you know, cause lacerations on your body and broken bones and all that stuff. So they tortured him for 4 years. They ended up releasing him because there was another prisoner there, a political prisoner, Fernando Albán. He was a Caracas city councilman who was very outspoken for the opposition. And he was actually on the run because the state security service was looking for him. Again, false charges of terrorism. They eventually caught him at the airport. And next thing you know, he's dead. And his death is written off as a suicide. Now, the prison where they keep these people is underground. However, his suicide, allegedly, he was able to open, you know, windows in a secure intelligence complex. And he jumped out of the fourth floor window above ground. Go ahead and do the math in your head. But because there was massive protests the next couple of days right there at those headquarters, because that man was very popular. So because they feared doing to that building what the French did to the Bastille, they released a couple of token political prisoners. So they ended up releasing Laurent Soleil, the libertarian, and they put his butt on an airplane to Spain. So he's traveling the world on tour these days. Luckily for him, though, he's got a brighter future because he's still a Venezuela advocate. He is reunited with his mother over there in Spain. And he and his significant other are expecting a baby, a little libertarian freedom baby. So, I mean, he went through 4 years of absolute hell, but he's had a happier ending. The thing is, though, we still have people in Venezuela who are undergoing this nightmare. I just talked to one brother this morning who is a member of the libertarian movement in Venezuela. So we're talking capital L libertarian. On the 30th of April protests, he got taken by the paramilitaries who took him to the army, who beat the hell out of him and interrogated him. He didn't talk. But you know, once they released him a few hours later, he had a very visible black eye and other bruises on his body. So, I mean, yeah. And by the way, he was wearing a libertarian T-shirt with the porcupine when this paramilitary. Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah. Other small L libertarians and the political party Vente Venezuela, they got arrested in the protests a week ago. Nobody's heard from them since then. That's incredibly troubling. So that's the thing. Regardless of which board game rule book you want to play by, regardless of who you want to argue is legitimate, the Maduro state is waging war on libertarians.
Right.
We did not see this. Libertarians are in a war.
Yeah, and from hearing you talk, like, I know the libertarian position is, you know, no foreign intervention, but that's not necessarily isolationism as it's usually accused. And one example I'm thinking of is, the Bundy Ranch standoff. There were people from all over the country. Now, of course, this isn't international borders, but it's interstate borders, right? People came from all these different states to invade and take over and, you know, with their own agenda and install a government or anything like that, but to stand with the people who were being oppressed by the government and to help them out, to help them just stand their ground. And because of that, just because of the number of people that they had there, they didn't go there to assault the standing army that was there. They really just went there and took a defensive position until the army stood down. So I think, you know, there is a way to help people in other countries who are being oppressed by these types of regimes without having to do, you know, some full-scale foreign invasion. Because obviously, if the U.S. military and the CIA start going down there, they're going to have their own agenda and it's going to get pretty ugly. And also to your point, you know, it's, you know, when we're talking about whether it's Guaido versus Maduro, it sounds, you know, and I don't know too much about Guaido and how he would run the government. And, you know, we might not know, except, you know, we can say whatever we want about Maduro because he has been running the country. Do they both kind of believe in the same systems? And so whichever one comes out and says, hey, I'm now the president of this country, are they still going to continue the oppressive system that's, you know, taxing people into poverty and this other stuff? We might not know that, you know, just like you were saying about Fidel, where he kind of came in and he was more on the side of I'm not sure how to, less of a dictator when he came in, and he was more justified in some of the actions he took earlier on, and then later on he became something else. Would Guaido, you know, is he that type of person now, and then later on would he become some more controlling dictator that wants to grow the size of government to have his way and you know, eventually become oppressive? That's something we don't know. But so I guess, you know, it's interesting to kind of say we should have to take sides on that versus saying, well, the people should be free to defend themselves against the military that's coming at them, and it doesn't matter whose military that is. We're talking about free individuals here who should have the right to defend themselves, and they should have the right to, they shouldn't be starving. They shouldn't be, fending for their lives. They should be free to transport medicine from one place in the world to another place and be able to get that where it's going. I think there's, what's that?
there's three levels. There's really like three levels of conflict and power, or yeah, three levels of conflict that are going on right now. So on the macro level, you've got the international thing. A lot of people in our movement have been correct to be wary about the CIA and the State Department and you know, the IMF having their greedy plans for what to do with Venezuela's resources. I mean, yeah, I'm not denying that. I'm not negating any of the claims that John Perkins makes in Confessions of an Economic Hitman. As a matter of fact, I generally agree with that. The thing is, what these folks are completely leaving out is the fact that the Cuban, Russian, and Chinese governments and corporations also have their own economic hitmen that are looking at Venezuela's resources with greedy eyes. A lot of people in the American movement, while they're complaining about the CIA and death squads, they're ignoring the fact that there are already paramilitary death squads in that country. They're just left-wing instead of right-wing. They're ignoring the fact that there is already a military occupation of at least 5,000 confirmed Cuban soldiers inside that country, although it would be 20,000. So what the U.S. is to Afghanistan, Cuba is absolutely to Venezuela. They are under a military occupation. You know, just you have them calling it, you know, this a puppet government and ally, but the overwhelming majority of the Venezuelan people don't want the Cubans there. It just came out recently in the New York Times that all these Cuban doctors that were deployed to the country were using healthcare as a weapon to coerce people into voting for the United Socialist Party. So they could tell if you were not registered for the CARNET ID program, which is the ID program, social behavior and how you vote and all that. And if you're not showing up to vote for the United Socialist Party, if you're not registered for the United Socialist Party, you know, whatever it is, then you'll find that you can't get your doctor's appointment, or your mom can't get that operation that she needs, or your daughter can't get medicine for her diabetes, you know, so on and so forth. That stuff was going on. So there, another thing, think about the Chinese, because there's Russian troops in that country. The Russian mafia, and it's all mafia and ex-KGB people that own the Russian government. They're gangsters. They absolutely have their designs. And then look at China. You've got more millionaires and billionaires in the Chinese Communist Party than in any other club on earth. You're deluding yourselves if you don't think that they're looking at Venezuelan oil like it's a medium rare steak. So on the macro level, yeah, CIA, I'm not denying that. But all these other assholes too. So there's nothing that we can do about that. We can't do anything about those governments and their intelligence agencies and their economic hitmen. That's all way above our pay grades. Then there is the next level, which is the power struggle between Guaido and Maduro. A lot of people are taking one side or another because it confirms their own biases. Unfortunately, with a lot of Americans here, they have that woke distrust of the U.S. government. Therefore, Maduro must be the guy, and we must morally defend him at all costs, which, no, like, you're defending a murderer and a usurper. You know, you don't have to say, let's invade, but you also don't have to defend him. So after the Maduro versus Guaido power struggle, then there is the libertarians and their struggle for survival and representation. They are nominally supporting the constitutional government under Juan Guaido. They are temporarily supporting him as the president for the sole purpose of adding pressure for Maduro to leave. But once Maduro leaves, then the libertarians are naturally going to be opposition to the social democrats, because they also want state policies. We happen to believe that Guaido and his party would relinquish power if they lost elections, whereas we know Maduro's party will not relinquish power. They got their butts whooped in the 2015 elections, and then they went and created this whole other government for themselves while also deploying these paramilitary groups to repress protesters and also commit political assassination. That's the long and short of it. So the international struggle, that's above our pay grade. Maduro versus Guaido, at the end of the day, you know, who cares? nominally with Guaido because, you know, he's a better deal in the short term, at least. And then my chips in the game are with libertarians. You should not be getting you want to say end central banking. You should not have soldiers at your university looking for you because you had a poster that said taxation is theft. You should not be in a prison cell under false terrorism because you organized a protest against the ruling party. That's our position.
Right.
So one more time, real quick, the correct libertarian position is, yes, U.S. government should not invade. That being said, the Venezuelans absolutely have a right to rise up against Maduro, and we as libertarians have a moral responsibility to voluntarily contribute to the libertarians' chances of survival and success.
Awesome. Absolutely. So I want to go back a little bit and kind of commend you for your actions on this with communicating with Cuba. So many people contact me all the time, and of course we get the emails from the Nigerian prince who wants to send us money. But there was an individual who contacted me from Pakistan, and you know it kind of sounded like that same story. And you know, he wanted to communicate, and he sounded like he wanted some help. And I was at first like, is this a scam? Is this guy just want some money? And, you know, after talking to him for a while, it turned out he was a libertarian and he wasn't interested in money. I even offered money and he didn't want it. He said he just wanted books, libertarian books. And he gave me a list of all these books that he wanted. So, just having an open mind when people communicate to you and not just assuming just because they come from some country where there's a lot of corruption and a lot of bad things that go on, not to assume that every person there is of that nature and that there are sometimes people who are going to reach out and ask for help, and you know, consider what they're asking for, and you know, if it's not you know, money's always a hard one because anyone can ask for money and say, oh, you know, somebody died or there's an army, whatever. They can make up any story to convince you to contribute, but when someone's asking for something that's, you know, a little bit more legitimate, like books, or someone can actually communicate and show you, as like my friends in Uganda did, they showed me that they created a school. They have actually something to show for that. They're actually doing something there. Be open to that, because there are people around the world who don't have the things that we take for granted. And, you know, just a little bit of help here and there can really do a lot. So I want to commend you for being open to that and communicating to these people that reached out to you, because that's a huge deal. We are coming up on our time, so I just want to give you an opportunity to, what can we do to help? So we have your website. It's on the screen here, and also it's in the link in the description. If you want to go to misesmombi.org. And what else can we do? Can we go to the website? Can we donate? How can we help you out with what you're working on?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can go to our website if you want to give us a solidarity gift and help us out. www.mises-mombi.org. And there you'll be able to find out all kinds of information about our organization, the Cuban Mises Institute. You'll be able to find news, articles, translations into English, translations into Spanish. So on one hand, we do the think tank thing. But we are also very much an incubator of activism. If you want to help facilitate libertarian activism, I would even say survival in Cuba and Venezuela, then absolutely please consider giving us a financial donation, because what we do, at certain points we facilitate activism and recruiting. For example, Mises Caucus here in the United States helped us crowdfund about $800 for the libertarian movement down there. And then that ended up enabling them to get a van full of them and several allied organizations. And they went on a 3-week recruiting tour all around Venezuela. There's no way you'd be able to swing that around the United States for $800. But down there, the dollar goes a long way. So literally, they were able to get a van full of people, feed them, billet them at different people's houses, and go do this great recruiting tour. And they got the numbers to show it. We've also been helping people with their medical bills. There are, certain people inside the libertarian movement that, need very specific medications to stay alive or to stay healthy, or else their health will significantly deteriorate, which is very dangerous in that country. For example, just between November of 2018 and mid-February of this year, they had close to 1,600 Venezuelans die in the hospital just from lack of medical supplies. Once the blackout started, I don't know what the casualties are, but they're definitely in the thousands, because we know that in the first national blackout, there were 300 dead just at Maracaibo University Hospital in one weekend. So that's 300 dead in one hospital, one city, in one weekend out of 23 states in five national blackouts where the power goes out at hospitals. Really, we're giving people what they need to stay alive. We facilitate other types of things for them to do. Sometimes they need to be able to go and buy some raw materials to make shields, to physically protect their bodies while they go hand out libertarian literature, or while they go and protest, on the main avenue. So go to Mises, Mises-MAMBI.org. If you want to give us a Bitcoin gift or a crypto gift, we've got a Bitcoin wallet address there. If anybody wants to use PayPal, you can go to CubanLibertarians.org. That's CubanLibertarians.org. And seriously, even if you can only give $10 or $20, every amount that you can give really helps us out, because the dollar goes a long way down there. In Cuba, for $25, we can get people 20 hours worth of internet time, which has been so invaluable for them to be able to do research, download libertarian books that exist digitally in Spanish, print them out, study them with their people. We've got photos of libertarians in Havana studying the Spanish translation of Adam Kokesh's book, Freedom. In Venezuela, we're keeping people alive, and we're also helping them advance their recruiting in the middle of this crisis. There's also other times that we give small grants to different foundations in Venezuela just because they're going into a neighborhood and they're doing outstanding work feeding a whole bunch of kids. So for all these people who think we're, doing the work of the CIA and right-wing fascists, that is absolutely absurd. We don't want the U.S. to invade, but we want to help them survive while the opposition overthrows this ruthless government. So please, if you have Bitcoin that you can send us, or if you can make a gift through PayPal, go to Mises-MAMBI.org, or for PayPal, CubanLibertarians.org. On the Mises Mambi website, you'll find all kinds of beautiful, helpful links there. But seriously, folks, we need money. Now, if you don't have money, there's still one very important way that you can help us out. There is a report that the Mises Mambi Institute just published, so anybody can find it at Mises blog. It's the Venezuela crisis.
We just lost you again. Can you say that address?
Go to Mises-Mambi.org/blog. It's the Venezuela crisis open source. We took courses in English, a lot of other open intelligence sources, but we also did painstaking mining for information through Spanish sources, Venezuelan media, other newspapers in Spain, Mexico, Argentina, Colombia that are covering this crisis from angles that are not available to the American media just because they don't speak Spanish. So we took these wonderful open source information sources, condensed them into chapters, by topic, and everything that you need to know about the constitutional crisis. We have excerpts translated from Spanish and then hyperlinks, so you can go see the media link yourself, with Google Translate. Cuban soldiers in Venezuela, we have the text translated hyperlink. Maduro's war on libertarians, text, hyperlink. So one more time, Mises-MAMBI.org/blog. Share that report with as many libertarians as you know. Share it with the local officers. Become Venezuelan libertarians. Tell people our position. Maduro created a whole separate government for himself, but other than that, we don't care because he's shooting at libertarians. We're just trying to help libertarians stay alive. We're not trying to help the U.S. invade. We're trying to help libertarians and other freedom fighters stay alive. That's what we're trying to do. So please, folks, help us out either with a financial gift at CubanLibertarians.org or Mises-Mambi.org. But if you absolutely can't help us out with a financial gift, if you distribute this report to any blogger, any journalist, any person you know who's got anything to say about Venezuela, send that to them. And as a personal friend, beg them, please read this. Because I'm telling you, brothers, while the U.S. is not yet in a war and we don't want them in a war, libertarians in Venezuela are in a war. They did not start it. That violence was visited on them. They are trying to be peaceful as much as possible. So for the ones who are still taking to the streets with peaceful civil disobedience, absolutely, I am going to help them stay alive while their country is in madness. So please, folks, help me out. CubanLibertarians.org. You can give us a gift on PayPal. Other than that, Mises-Mambi.org. Yeah.
Awesome. So I'm going to have all those links. We have Mises-Mambi.org in the comments. I'm going to make sure to add the other links in there when we publish this. As always, subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/taxationistheft. And I'm running for president. Check me out on facebook.com/Berman2020.
Yeah.
And awesome. Well, it's been great having you on. These are some really interesting insights. Thank you so much for keeping us up to date and giving us kind of a perspective on, you know, what's really going on and kind of a guide, kind of a being our compass in how we should, you know, where we should be on this situation that's going down. So thank you so much for that. Thank you for doing what you do, because I know it's really difficult. You know, you're putting yourself in a position that's potentially dangerous, especially if you're traveling to different parts of the world. I'm sure you're on a million lists already, as are the best libertarians are. So thank you again.
The Cuban government is definitely watching me. I can confirm that.
Yeah, it's that's how you gauge a libertarian, by how many lists you're on.
Literally tried multiple times to infiltrate my organization. As a matter of, you remember the soup Nazi from Hogan's Heroes? I have a particular relationship with a particular Cuban state security agent. Obviously, he hasn't shared his real name with me, but that guy is like my soup Nazi. You know, he thinks that every person organizing against communism is as uneducated as your average Cuban high school dropout. So, like, he's tried a lot of really dumb ways to fool me, and it's kind of funny. I would probably be sad if that guy stopped trying. But he's, you know, he's been on the funnier end. But outside of that, that organization is, you know, arresting and beating people down there. And they are absolutely tracking me. As a matter of fact, I had a particular place in Las Vegas for 4 years. I went somewhere else in Nevada because, unfortunately, had an arrest warrant a couple years ago because of an unpaid parking ticket, my bad. But boom, because of that, my address is public record. They found it. So I decided not to create that opportunity for them. You know what I'm saying? So there are risks that come with it, but yet it's something that I chose to do. I was very naive when I first got involved in 2017. I thought this was just going to be, you know, more LP activism, but in SAP. I had no idea that this was going to be as James Bond as it is, with all these foreign agents trying to infiltrate my organization and me, you know, training people on how to stay alive while everybody's shooting. It's totally insane, but I'm committed to this to the very end.
That's something that I thought of earlier, is just like all this stuff you're saying, it sounds like a James Bond movie. But this is reality. It's so weird. Like in the US, we take everything for granted, just like that, you know, oh, we live in this nice, wonderful, peaceful society and everything's great. And it's like, it's kind of like, I guess because the US Army is so big, we're kind of hidden behind it. And maybe that's why everyone loves the military so much, because life is great because of that. But the reality is they're doing so much damage on, you know, on the other side of that. And there's so much turmoil going on in the world that is, you know, not always at the hand of the U.S. government, but they do a lot of damage. And, you know, Anyway, it's there's a lot of stuff going on, and you know, we should really not just isolate ourselves and be like, hey, we're so happy that we have wonderful lives, but we should actually be helping, you know, as much as we can in a way that's, you know.
How can I, as an individual, make other people more free
right. In
places where they would not be able to do so without my help?
Absolutely. We talk all the time about, you know, donating money to the homeless, donating food, donating medical supplies, donating toys to homeless children, you know, all these things that we talk about, which are great. But there are also other people who are suffering around the world in much worse ways. You know, not to downplay, you know, homelessness and starvation, but it's
not at all. They have shelters. I mean, there are people who go to bed hungry. That is terrible. But there are also shelters that people can go to where they will be guaranteed a meal, if not a cot. Venezuela, you don't even have food in the dumpsters, dude. There's a crisis. It's bad.
Yeah, it's terrible. All right. Well, thank you again so much for coming on the show and talking about all these things. And, we'll see you next time. And until then, taxation is theft.
Taxation is theft.
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?